We're going to enjoy some time tonight. We had some of you have probably already heard, if you haven't, you had the opportunity to have it, and you missed it somehow. We're going to talk about some lessons learned from a canoe trip tonight. At the camp where Don and the kids went today and where the boys and I were there for the Future Preacher training camp, they have, the camp is surrounded on two sides by creeks and on the other two sides by roads. On those two sides where there are creeks, they got down there some canoes. And so we decided before we left camp that we were going to go on a little canoe ride, paddle down the creek a little ways, and come back. We made some mistakes, and I hope that all of us tonight can learn some lessons from the mistakes that we made on that canoe trip. I think we can. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verses 23 through 27. Tell you what, I think the boys felt a little bit like Paul on that trip. He said, "Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measures, in prisons more frequent, in death oft. Of the Jews 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck." You guys still got 2 more times to go on that. He 3 times suffered shipwreck. You know, we only read about the one in the book of Acts in chapter 27, 26, 27, 28 there. We read about his shipwreck. But he says 3 times he suffered shipwreck. "A night and a day I have been in the deep." Oof, that'd be pretty rough. Floating in the ocean for a night and a day. "In journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness." Those boys, when they had their little canoe accident, I'm sure they felt like they were in peril of the water and in peril of the wilderness, and hungry and thirsty, all kinds of perils. But it didn't have to be that way. The first mistake that we made was that in every situation, we should always plan ahead. And we didn't do that. We should, but we don't sometimes, do we? We just go off thinking, "Oh, well, the best will come of it." And we don't have any kind of plan. We do that in the church often. We just go on about as though everything's just going to work out. We don't have any kind of goal in mind, or any way of accomplishing that goal, even if we do have an idea. We don't have a plan. And sometimes, without that plan, things go wrong. That was the first mistake we made. When we got down to the dock, and we talked a little bit, "Okay, you go and you this canoe, and you go in that," and we did a little bit of planning. We had 2 experienced canoers and 2 new canoers. And so we put one of the experienced canoers in each canoe and put one of the new guys in each one. So we made a little bit of a plan. We said, "Well, the one that knows what they're doing can help the one that doesn't." But it didn't work out too well, because we'll talk in a minute about the next problem that we had. But Luke chapter 14 and verses 28 through 32. "Says, for which of you intending to build a tower sitteth not down first and counts the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply after he hath laid the foundation is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish." And then he goes on to explain, if a king's going to war, he's going to plan to see if he thinks he can conquer the other kingdom. Or if he doesn't have enough troops, he's going to send for peace first. We didn't talk before we left about how far we were going to go, or where we were going to go, or when we were going to meet back, or where we were going to meet back. We didn't talk about those things. We didn't have a plan. God plans. In fact, God has planned things from before the foundation of the world. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 34, Jesus says, "The king shall say to them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." God plans ahead. That's way ahead. Ephesians 1:4 also talks about how he has chosen us in him before the foundation of the world. And Revelation 13:8 mentions the fact that the Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world. God had a plan. It wasn't just an accident that Jesus came. It wasn't just an accident that he built the church. None of these things are accidents. They were part of God's plan from the very beginning. From the time he built the world, the universe, put it all together, he had a plan in place. Oh, how important those plans are. Well, the second mistake that we made, it's always when you're with a group, don't get separated. Stay with the group. Stay together. Don't get separated. Well, we didn't follow up on that. We shouldn't get separated, but sometimes we do, don't we? We separate ourselves in ways that we shouldn't. Galatians 2, 12 through 14, Paul talks about when Peter was eating with the Gentiles, and then some from James and some of the other Jewish brethren came, and he separated himself from the Gentiles. Sometimes we separate ourselves at times that we shouldn't. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12 tells us how important it is to have companions. Two are better than one. They have a good reward for their labor. If they fall, the one will help his lift up his fellow, but woe to him that's alone when he falls. And again, if two lie together, they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? If one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. So getting separated can be a dangerous thing. That's one of the things that Satan likes to do to us, is to try to divide us off and get us fighting amongst ourselves so we're separated, so that he can come in and swoop down and snatch one of us away in his jaws. And he knows that he can't attack us when we're all together, but he'll get us if we're not together. God doesn't allow the separation. When we separate, it's not because of God, it's because of our flaws and our weaknesses. Romans chapter 8, verses 35 through 39, Paul says, "Who shall separate us from the love of God?" Hey, God isn't the one. Nothing, he says, shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or the sword, as it is written, "For thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord." There's nothing so powerful that it can snatch us away from God. But what we have to learn is, even though nothing can take us away from Him, we ourselves often separate ourselves from God. We do what nothing else in the world has the power to do. So we first realized there was a problem. as we were going down the creek, Don and the kids and I all in one canoe, the boys had gone first. And I didn't plan. We didn't talk. We got to a spot where the creek forked. And I said to Don, I didn't see which way the boys went. We'd gotten separated. That was our first sign that somebody, well, did they go further on down this way or did they turn and go down this way? We didn't know. We said, well, we'll go on down this way. Maybe we'll hit a straight stretch and we'll be able to see them. Didn't know it at the time, but they had in fact turned the other direction. So we were on a wild goose chase going the other way. We were never going to catch them. Never going to find them. But we went. The third thing that we need to learn is that something small can cause a big problem. You know, sometimes we look at sin and we say, well, these are the big sins and I never do any of them. I've never killed anybody. I've never robbed anybody or I've never done this or that. We pick these are the bad ones. I never did those things. Just these little sins. They're not so bad. That's the only ones I do. Well, we've got to learn. Small things can cause a big problem. God warns us. Galatians 5 and verse 9, he says, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. In the Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs as it's also referred to, chapter 2 and verse 15, the writer there says, take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. You know, the little animals get into the garden, can do a lot of damage. Those little foxes, they can get into the garden and spoil the grapevines. God warns us about the little things and the trouble that they can cause. But we still get in trouble. 1 Corinthians 5, 6 through 8, we're like these Corinthians sometimes. They had allowed some sin in. They had allowed this little leaven in there. And not only were they allowing it, they were boasting about it. And Paul says, your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened. For even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. You see, the little things are what makes a big problem a lot of times. People don't often believe the wild, bald-faced lie. They believe the twisted truth that's almost all true, but just has a little bit of falsehood in it. That's the ones that get so many people. Because so much of it's true that they say, well, that must be right. That sounds right. That sounds right. That sounds right. Huh. Well, if all those other things, that other part must be right too. It's the little things that get us. In the case of our canoe trip, it was some little spiders. Some little spiders jumped off of a tree branch, or so the story goes. I didn't witness it. But those little spiders fell into the boat. And one of those fellows that was in the boat didn't like those spiders falling on him. And if you've ever ridden in a canoe, it's not like being on a cruise ship. They aren't the steadiest things in the world. And once you start to rocking, it's very easy to get yourself into trouble. But those spiders fell, and then we learn our fourth lesson. Fear is an enemy. Fear is an enemy. We have to learn to overcome fear. fear is not from God. 2 Timothy 1:7, and we talked about this morning, that God has not given us the spirit of fear. The spirit He's given us brings power and love and a sound mind. And the spirit of fear is foreign to Him. It comes through the work of the devil, not the work of God. And even though we know that, we fear anyway. All of us are afraid of something probably that we really ought not to be. With little children, it's often that they're afraid of the dark. My children, but it's dark in there. Well, it was light, and you turn off the light, nothing has changed. It's the same room that it was just a moment ago. But suddenly there's something scary about that room. We get afraid of things, even though we should know better. Fear is an enemy, but we fear anyway. Matthew 10, verses 28 through 31, Jesus says, "Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear Him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." He says, we're more valuable than sparrows. And yet, God cares for the sparrows. He'll care for us as well. Hebrews 13, 5 and 6 also tells us much the same thing. God has promised us, "I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do to me." And the problem with fear is many times when we're faced with a fearsome situation, we run from that fear into some other fear. We run into something worse. Now I must say, little spiders can be squished. And they can generally be squished pretty easily. But those little spiders caused some fear. And that fear caused panic. And that panic caused a reaction that caused a canoe to tip over and a couple of young men to get wet. They wound up in the water. Now here's the first thing that we had done right. Number 5. Always wear your life preserver. That was the first thing that we did right. We made sure before we got in the canoes that we all had our life preservers on. We had our life jackets on. So that when that canoe did tip, even though those boys went into the water, that life jacket brought them back up to the top. And I'm sure they were glad of that. Good thing we did that much. You know, God gives us protective gear too. And He tells us that we should wear it. In Ephesians chapter 6, verses 11 through 20, and we won't read that whole section. You may be somewhat familiar with it. Put on the whole armor of God. Now, in a canoe situation, armor would not be a good thing. It would just make you sink a little faster. But when it comes to the spiritual battle that we're in, that armor is a good thing. This armor that involves the truth being girt about our loins, a breastplate of righteousness, our feet ready with the gospel, having a shield of faith to be able to quench the darts of the wicked one, a helmet of salvation to protect our head, and a sword, the sword of the Spirit, to defend as well as to attack. God has given us some protective gear, and we need to wear that protective gear at all times. It's not something that we just wear on Sunday when we come to church. It's something we need all the time. In fact, we need it even more when we're away from the saints. When we're out there on our own, we talked in class this morning about some, you know, it's good if we can be around Christians, but sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're around and have to be around people who do not think about doing things that God wants them to do. And we can't live in this world without being around people like that. We need to be protected. We need to have our armor on. The sixth thing that they learned very quickly was, it is easier to tip the boat than not to. It's very difficult in a small boat like a canoe or a kayak or even smaller. It takes a great deal of balance to keep that thing balanced. And it's very easy to tip it. The same thing is true of our spiritual boat. It's very easy to get things out of balance and tip to one side or the other. Many churches get out of balance, and the members of those churches get themselves tipped over as a result of it. God warns us in Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 32, "You shall observe to do therefore as the Lord your God hath commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left." You know, it doesn't matter when you're in a canoe which side you tip over on. When you tip over, you tip over. It's not as a well, but we got to beware of tipping to the left side so we go get over on this right side. No, if you tip over on the right side, you're going to get just as wet as if you tip over on the left side. You see, you've got folks in the church that they're so afraid. Well, we got to be so beware of liberalism, and we got to watch out for that. So we're going to go all the way over here to this other extreme. They're going to wind up just in less trouble over there on the other extreme as they would have been if they'd have gone to the liberal extreme. We've got to keep the balance. Keep that boat in good shape. Level. Hebrews 4:11 says, "Let us therefore labor therefore to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief." It is labor. It is work to keep the boat balanced. It's easy to let it tip. You don't even have to try to tip it. That's easy to do. But if you want to keep it going smoothly, that takes work. We've got to have that dedication to work at it. But even with all that, sometimes in our own lives, and certainly sometimes in the church as well, we get out of balance sometimes. Romans chapter 7 and verses 18 and 19, Paul struggled with the same thing. He said, "For I know that in me, that is, in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not. For the good that I would, I do not. But the evil which I would not, that I do." And we find ourselves in that same boat sometimes. We know what we want to do, and we know what we shouldn't do, but we wind up doing the very thing we didn't want to do. When we were leaving, the boys all said that they didn't want to get wet. They didn't want to fall in the creek, but they did. Because once they got out there, the thing that they would do, they didn't do. And the thing that they didn't want to do, that's the thing that they did. Then seventh lesson that we learn is that when you tip the boat, it affects others. You know, sometimes we have this foolish notion that somehow I can live my life however I want to, and it won't matter to anybody else. It won't affect anybody else. It won't influence anybody else. That's nonsense. It will affect everyone else around us in one way or another. When that one young man got those spiders and started flailing, and he tipped that boat, the other young men in that boat with him got just as wet as he did when the boat went over, because they were in it together. And not only that, when their companions in the other boat came to try to help them get out, to get up into their canoe, they tipped that one over too. So they managed to all get in the water. You see, when you tip your canoe, it's going to affect other folks as well. The same thing is true in the spiritual realm. When we get involved in sin, we can cause others to fall. Romans 14:13, 1 Corinthians 8:9 both talk about that. I want to share with you 1 John 2:10. He that loves his brother abides in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. If we love our fellow brothers and sisters, we're not going to do things to cause them to stumble. Do things that would or could cause them to stumble. And that's what Paul had talked about in Romans 14 and also in 1 Corinthians 8. But when we do cause others to sin, God hates that. Jesus said that whoever causes one of those little ones to sin, to offend, said it would have been better if they had taken a millstone and tied it around their neck and cast themselves into the sea than to cause someone else to sin. God hates sin, and He hates it when we cause others to sin. We talked in class Wednesday night about a fellow by the name of Hymenaeus. He's mentioned in 1 Timothy 1, and we concluded pretty thoroughly that he's also mentioned the same fellow in 2 Timothy 2. 1 Timothy 1:19-20, it says that he tells Timothy to hold faith and a good conscience that some have put away concerning faith and have made shipwreck. And one of those was Hymenaeus. And Paul said about Hymenaeus and Alexander, who were those two individuals, whom I have delivered unto Satan, that they may learn not to blaspheme. And he says of those individuals in 2 Timothy 2:17-18, their word will eat as doth a canker. They have erred concerning the truth, saying the resurrection is past, and they overthrow the faith of some. We can cause others to sin, and God hates it when we do that. If we destroy someone else's faith, we will have to answer to Him for that. If we draw someone else into sin, I remember one preacher. It was one of the saddest stories that I recall ever hearing in a sermon. He told how when he was a teenager, he had a younger brother, much like Quinn and Cam, who were two of the young men on this trip. He was the older of the two. And when he got to be about 16 or 17, he began to get into some things that he should not have. And he got into some alcohol and some drugs. And he got into running around with girls. And he got into all kinds of trouble. And his little brother followed right along behind him doing the same thing. Well, when he got to be about 19 or 20, he realized what a fool he was being. And he straightened his life up. And he turned it around. And he became a preacher. And by the time he said this, he was some 40-something years old. He said, my little brother never did. Some 20 to 25 years later, his little brother was still involved in the drugs and the alcohol and the womanizing. You see, sometimes we lead someone else down a path. And maybe we even get off that path later on. But they won't get back off of the path. We need to beware. The eighth thing that we learn, and the boys will corroborate this, help can't come fast enough. Now, you remember the Gilligan's Island. They said they went for a 3-hour tour and they wound up getting stranded on that island for I don't know how many seasons of television. But these boys, we went out. We just gonna go out for 30 minutes, or we weren't gonna be gone very long. Just go down the creek a little ways and come back. We were gonna go because we wanted to get to Tuscaloosa in time to eat some supper. That was at 2:30. When I finally heard them hollering for help at 5:30, they were ready to go. They were ready to get out of those woods and get away from that creek. But when we're in danger, during physical duress, help can't come fast enough. You know, we have a system all over our country, 911, when there is an emergency. And unlike some of the folks nowadays who call 911 because McDonald's is out of chicken nuggets or somebody didn't put enough shrimp in their stir fry, 911 is for actual physical emergencies where life is threatened, where there is danger. But when someone's having a heart attack, or when someone is breaking into a home, or some of those kind of things, and they call 911, and help can't get there fast enough. They'd want the policeman to be right next door. They'd want the ambulance to be waiting at the front door when they get off the phone. They understand that in the physical realm. And that's certainly true. We see that in the Bible, that during times of physical distress, like in Genesis 18 and verse 6, here we see just some folks that were hungry. But Abraham hastened into the tent and told Sarah, "Make ready quickly." These men had been journeying. They were hungry. They were ready to have something to eat. In Joshua chapter 10 and verse 6, the men of Gibeon who had signed a treaty with the Israelites called for Joshua because they were being attacked. And they said, "Come up to us quickly and save us and help us, for the kings of the Amorites are gathered against us." But you know, if that's the case with physical situations, that there's an urgency, that help can't come fast enough. And those boys, I think they were out there in those woods for about 2.5 to 3 hours by that creek, not knowing where they were or how to get to where they wanted to get. And it was a long time. Cam thinks it was 4 hours. That's how long. I think they said they thought it was about 12 hours when it seemed like a long time before help showed up. And sometimes they began to lose hope. But if that's the case in a physical situation, and they weren't even really in any severe distress, none of them was injured. None of them was dying of starvation. I mean, they'd just eaten lunch not long before we went. They weren't freezing to death. It was a nice warm day, about 85 to 90 degrees, so they didn't have to worry about that. The only danger, they were worried about a snake or something like that. But even in time of just being in a physically uncomfortable situation and being scared, being alone and not knowing what to do. But what about a spiritual situation? How much more urgent in spiritual matters is it that help come fast? In Numbers 16 and verse 46, when God sent a plague through the camp and Moses knew it, he told Aaron, "Quickly get the censer and quickly go into the camp because God has sent a plague, because the people were not right with God spiritually." Matthew 28 and 7, after Jesus rose from the dead, Mary Magdalene is told to go quickly and tell the disciples that he was risen. In Luke 14, Jesus tells the parable of a master who's having a wedding feast, and he likens it to God calling people to come to the banquet for his son in heaven. And the master says to them, "Go quickly into the streets and the lanes and bring in the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind." We go quickly. We know that there are lost all around us. We need to go quickly. However, we need to not go so quickly that we don't plan. If we go haphazardly, if we just go rushing off, not knowing what we're doing, you know, somebody calls 911 and says, it's an emergency, send the ambulance. And so they hop in the ambulance and they take off. And they didn't find out where they were supposed to be going. And so they're going 2 or 3 miles down the wrong way before the dispatcher gets and says, no, no, you got to turn around. You're going the wrong way. You got to go the other way. See, we got to know where we're going. We've got to have a plan. But quickly, we've got to go quickly. The ninth thing that we learn is that helping others, finding the lost, for example, is hard work. Now, it doesn't just happen by accident. I've still got a sore on my thumb from the blister from rowing my canoe up and down those creeks looking for those boys, trying to figure out where they were. I rowed for a solid 3 hours, and I'm not a real athletic type person when it comes to something like that. That was a long time. And I was so glad when I finally got close enough to where they actually were that I could heard one of them holler for help. At the same time, I was concerned when I heard them holler for help that perhaps there was something more serious wrong. Fortunately, when I got there, I found that it was just a simple matter of they had tipped over their canoes and they were stranded in the woods on the edge of the creek bank. But helping others is hard work. Jesus did it anyway. John chapter 5 and verse 17. Jesus answered them, my Father works hitherto, and I work. He said, work, for the night is coming when no man can work. That was one of the things I was working for, is I wanted to find those boys before it got dark. I didn't want to have to try to be hunting them in the dark. I didn't want them to have to spend the night out there in the woods alone at night. Even though, again, you know, not that they would have frozen to death or anything, as it was the middle of July, or at the beginning of July anyway. So it was warm enough. But Jesus did that hard work anyway because it was an important work that needed to be done. And we need to do it as well. Even though it is a hard work, it is a rewarding work. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58, Paul says, therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. It's not in vain. It may be hard work, yes. But it's work with a purpose. And it has a goal in mind. And you receive fruits from your labors. And that makes it worthwhile. Your work is not in vain. When I finally found them, I found both canoes floating in the middle of the creek, full of water. Now these canoes were a good 12 foot long. And as wide as the top of this podium at least. And full of water. And I was in my canoe. That's not easy to get a canoe full of water turned over and dumped out and back floating on top of the water without tipping your own canoe over. That wasn't easy. Well, in the same way, when we go out to seek and save the lost, we're going to find difficult situations. We're going to have to study and we're going to have to struggle. We're going to find people that don't have good attitudes. We're going to find people who are not good soil. We're going to find some people that don't want to be helped. Now, fortunately, in this case, these boys wanted to be helped. But if I'd have got there and they said, no, we're going to stay here. We don't want to go with you. What could I have done? So we've got to find those that are lost. And it takes time sometimes to find them. But when we find them, both we and they can rejoice. We also need to go prepared. I had 2 extra life preservers in the canoe with me. Even though I knew the boys each had one when they left, I had 2 with me. And it was a good thing I did, because one of the boys somewhere along the line, after they had gotten to shore, had managed to lose his. as though he needed one in case we tipped over again. That was a possibility. We needed to be prepared. But then the tenth and final thing that we learned from this experience is that priorities can change in a heartbeat. When they saw me we're so glad you're here, Brother James. We thought we were going to die. We thought we were dead. We thought we were going to drown. We thought the snake was going to get us. They thought it was the end. And you know what? I asked them on the way home, when your canoe tipped over, did you care about the newest, latest video game? They didn't care about that at that point. Did you care who the best basketball player is? Didn't care about that at that point. Because see, when we're faced with a life and death situation, the things that are seemingly important in our everyday lives suddenly don't seem so important anymore. And even though they weren't maybe as near death as they thought they were, they realized pretty quickly that the things that they get all excited about on a daily basis, you know what, those things really aren't that important. And we need to learn that without having to be in a life and death situation, because we need to be living with the proper priorities, so that if the time does come when we are in a life or death situation, we'll be ready, whatever may come. Some things must come first. You have the scriptures there, Matthew 5, 23 and 24, Matthew 6, 33 and 34, 7, 5, 8, 21 and 22, 12, 29, 22, 37 and 38. Those are various different situations that Jesus talks about where one thing needs to come before another. Of course, the most significant of those probably is Matthew 6, 33 and 34. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. We know that's the first and foremost thing. But do we do it? I know that we say, well, yeah, seeking the kingdom of God first, that's first. Do we do it? Or when it comes our time, when we say, oh, this is it, what are we going to be saying then? Are we going to be saying, oh, I wish I had spent more time watching TV?